Welcome to St. John's United Church of Christ.
We're a church which opens its arms to the leadership and participation of the LGBT plus community.
All are welcome here.
More than welcome here. This is home. We belong.
Usually at this time, I'm looking at the clock thinking to myself, I gotta stop preaching because it's time to leave. So thank you for your patience, because I can't leave you with a reading like that without explaining some of it. Let's pray. Welcoming God, let your love of all people guide us and inform us. Amen. Last March at the Oscars, actor Will Smith stunned millions of people when he walked up on the stage and slapped comedian Chris Rock across the face. Chris Rock had made a joke about Jada Pinkett Smith, Will's wife, and her hairstyle or her lack of hair. He didn't know that she has a medical condition called alopecia, which stops your hair from growing, and it's not anything to joke about. But he made the joke, and Will Smith saw the devastated look on his wife's face, and he stood up to defend her honor. Walked up on the stage and assaulted Chris Rock as millions of people watched in disbelief. Because that's what love does, right? Defends honor. In our story this morning, we have another group of people who feel like their sister's honor needs to be defended. And so we have this posturing again. Jacob's daughter, Dinah, goes walking, and Shechem sees her, rapes her, abducts her, and then says he loves her. Because that's what love does, right? Abducts people. Shechem reminds me of a caveman cartoon I remember seeing when I was a little girl. The caveman is the knuckle dragger, right? And he's got the big club. And he says something really profound, like, "Me want woman." And then he finds a woman and he hits her over the head with the club, and then he grabs her by the hair and drags her back to the cave. And then they live happily ever after, right? This is what happened to Dinah in this story. Now, her brothers become very angry because she's been violated. And so they come up with this deceitful plan. They pretend to make an agreement, and the only thing that they want is for all of these other men to be circumcised, which is a very painful and bloody procedure, but these men are willing to do it. It's an incredible story. They promise that if you will just do this one thing, then we will all be one big happy family. And so the men of Shechem decide that it sounds good to them, because what they really want is to absorb the tribe of Jacob. They want the women and the possessions of this tribe. And so they are actually caught with their pants down, figuratively, by Simeon and Levi, who wait until these men are in so much pain they can't get up, and then they massacre all of them. And then the other brothers come and they plunder the whole place. They take the wives and the children and everything of value. They leave a horrific mess. But when they get home, they say, now our sister's honor has been restored. Because that's what love does, right? This is one of the most messed up narratives in the Old Testament. And I do pray before I choose these stories. I had no idea how bad this one actually was until I got into it. But every time I hear someone say, we need a biblical basis for marriage, we need our government to be following biblical values, I cringe. Have they read this book? Do they know what's in it? So, I think what we begin with today is a little bit of history, so we know where these people are coming from and how they get to this place. Years before, God makes a covenant with Abraham. It's a pinky swear, you remember from last week. They make this pinky swear. God says, I will be your God. You will be my people. You follow all of my laws and you worship me, and I will make you as numerous as the stars in the sky. Your descendants will be without number. Abraham has a family. His son Isaac has children, and Jacob is the grandson of Abraham and Sarah. So he is a child of this covenant. He understands what it means to be in this particular family, and it's important to him. But he is no stranger to deception. Jacob tricks his own father into giving him the birthright, the blessing that belongs to his older brother Esau. And then Jacob himself is tricked when he finds a person he wants to marry, and the day after the wedding, the morning after the wedding night, he realizes the wrong woman is in his bed. His father-in-law has tricked him and switched the women at the last moment. So Jacob now is married to the wrong sister, and he has to work a number of years before he can earn the woman he actually wanted to marry. Now, at some point, he gets tired of living with this conniving father-in-law, and he packs up his family, his wives, his children, and all of his flocks and herds and whatever else these folks had at that time, and he moves. He begins to wander, and eventually he finds this place that he wants to stay. He wants to put down roots and have a home, and it happens to be land owned by Hamor and Shechem. So he goes to them and he negotiates a price and he buys this piece of land and he settles his whole family there. It's a beautiful spot and he's ready to stay there and call it home. And then this story happens. Dinah goes walking to visit the other women of the region, and Shechem goes all caveman on her, and then all hell breaks loose. Now, when I look at stories like this, the first people I look for are the ones who don't speak, the people who are a part of the story, but they have no voice. And the main person here who doesn't speak is Dinah. Dinah starts out as the subject. She goes for a walk, but in the second line, she's already the object. She no longer has a voice. No one goes to her and says, Dinah, what happened? What do you need us to do? What makes sense for you? Now, there is some story, actually there was a novel, a fiction novel written by Anita Diamond. It's called The Red Tent. And this fiction novel depicts Dinah and Shechem as being in love. Dinah wanted to be with Shechem. Now, we don't know what happened because Dinah doesn't have a voice, but rabbis over the centuries have asked this question, was there actually a rape? Did that happen? And the reason is because the Bible, it defines rape with a scream. If a woman is raped, she screams, and that's how we know that she's being raped. But if she is silent, it is consensual. Now, I have so many issues with that definition, but we don't have time to go there. Now, the Bible also tells us what to do if there is a rape. And the solution is that the rapist marries the woman he raped. I have problems with that as well. Now, the reason today that would make absolutely no sense, but the reason it made sense for these people was because the only thing a woman was good for was her virginity. And once it was gone, she had no value. And her father would not be able to get her married to anyone. So the rapist had to pay the price for the crime, marry the woman, provide for her for the rest of her life, was not allowed, not permitted to divorce her ever, and also paid the bride price to the family. So it was purely a financial agreement, because that's what love does, right? Now, Jacob should be the person in the story that speaks, and he doesn't say a word till the very end. He doesn't go talk to Dinah. He doesn't calm down his hot-headed sons. He sticks his head in the sand and lets this whole thing unfold. And then at the end, he complains. He says to his sons, look at the mess you made. We just got settled here. I just bought this land, and now we've got to pick up, pack up, and hit the road again. And guess what else? I'm going to have to change my name, which he does in the next chapter. God had given him the name Israel two chapters ago, but he wasn't using it. But now he realizes the name Jacob is like having a target on your back. So he decides to begin using the new name. Now, I know there's more to it than that, but you can't ignore the timeline here. He's mad because he's going to lose his land. Now, the narrative explains to us something about Shechem, which I find fascinating because this is the point of the whole thing. Shechem says he really loves this girl. He wants to marry her. He's willing to pay any amount of money. Set the bride price as high as you want, and I will pay it. Just give me this girl as my wife. So that actually fulfills the law. The rapist has to marry the victim. Shechem is actually doing what's right here. But Jacob and his sons, the sons in particular, don't want to hear that. Why not? It would solve all their problems. The point of the story is not about the rape. It's not about how the Bible talks about rape. It's not even about Dinah. The problem here is that Shechem is a foreigner. He's an outsider. He looks different. He maybe speaks different. His family has different rituals. They do life differently. This story is about Jacob's family circling the wagons, building the fence, keeping out the ones who don't look like us or talk like us or think like us. We are going to keep the bloodline pure. That's what this story is about. Is that what love does? Now, the narrator also tells us that we have some fixing to do. So Levi and Simeon are the fixers. If you watch any mafia movies or what's the one on Netflix? Ozark. If you watch that, there's always a fixer. If somebody gives you trouble, you call the fixer. It'll cost you some money, but the fixer will make your problem go away. They will, that person won't exist anymore. And so Levi and Simeon are those fixers because the brothers are angry. And anger is a normal response. Anger is okay. There are days when I am just so mad about something and my husband tries to be the fixer. He'll try to fix things for me so I'm not so angry, and I'll say, would you just let me be mad? It is okay for a while just to feel mad. You don't have to make it all better. Now, anger can fuel us. It can fuel our energy when we see injustice and we need to call it out. But it can also fuel violence. And so we have to be really careful where we allow that energy to go. Now, if you've ever watched a movie, Star Wars, or any movie where there's fighting and there's good guys and bad guys, when the good guys annihilate the bad guys, everybody cheers. We all love it. Sociologist Martha Beck says that we, humanity, we are hardwired to enjoy completely destroying things that threaten us. We don't just destroy the threat, we like it. We enjoy it. It's part of evolution, and that's what the brothers do. But is that what love does? Simeon and Levi are slapped on the back. Way to go, bro. That was epic. Epic for who? Now, what if Dinah had been asked what she wanted or what she needed? But Dinah's never asked. What if Jacob had stepped up? What if he had made the negotiation and said that was good? But he doesn't say a word. What if both families just realized that we are all children of God, we're all connected, and it would be just fine to welcome the outsider? How many lives would have been saved? How many fights would have been avoided? Isn't that what love does? What if Will Smith had spent just a minute being curious before he lashed out at Chris Rock? Now, we all know what happened inside Will Smith because we've all been talking about and studying fight or flight response. So we know that when he heard the words that Chris Rock said and he saw Jada Pinkett Smith's face fall, those words must have hit him in the chest. His autonomic response began to activate. And his reptilian brain, his amygdala, began to spew chemicals. And he went immediately into fight or flight, and we know which one he favors. He went to fight. And with every step as he walked toward the stage, his anger must have been growing until he got up there and couldn't help himself. No excuse, but he was not in his right mind. But what if when he felt the impact of those words, what if just for a minute he had calmed himself down and thought about it? What if he had walked to the stage and put his arm around Chris Rock and said, Jada has a medical condition and it's not something you should joke about, and I think you owe her an apology. And what if Chris Rock, he would have cracked a joke for sure, but eventually maybe he would have said, Jada, I'm so sorry, please forgive me. And we don't know what Jada said, because as far as I know, she didn't say anything when all this was happening. She had no voice. How different things would have looked in that moment if we had all responded with love. Because that's what love does. It gives us a chance to speak and to be heard and to recognize what the other person needs. And that's what God is challenging us to do in our own lives and in our church. We give voice to those who have been victimized. We make space for healing. We welcome the outsiders without fear. They don't want to take us over. They just want a family. We do not try to keep out those who are not like us. We invite them in specifically, and we name them specially so that they know that they are invited to the table here. And that is why in our welcome statement here at St. John's, we specifically say we acknowledge the gifts and leadership of the LGBTQ community. And we acknowledge the Fox, Peoria, Anishinaabewake, and Potawatomi people, because these folks are Dinah. They are the ones who were hurt. They are the ones who have been held responsible. They are the ones who have been feared. And we want them to know that we welcome everyone here. Now today, when you leave this place, I invite you to look up at the south side of our building, and you'll see a flag like the one that Padmini and I talked about earlier. And when you look at that flag and you think about what all those stripes represent, notice how you feel. Are you proud and pleased, or do you feel a little tight? Maybe your stomach feels clenched. Maybe you feel a little confused or a little frustrated or a little angry. Pay attention to those feelings, because if you have that kind of reaction, maybe what you're really feeling is fear. Fear that we'll be taken over, or fear that we won't be the church that we have always been. Because we won't be. We'll be better. On the front of our bulletin today, there's a brief quote from the Tao, and it says this: in the pursuit of knowledge, every day something is added. In the pursuit of the way, every day something is dropped. So today I hope that we've had several bits of knowledge added, but my question for you now is, what needs to be dropped? Maybe it's our fear of the outsiders. Maybe it's our fear of the future. Maybe it's our fear of change. Maybe we should just drop fear, because that is what love does. Let's go in peace. Our service has ended. Thank you all for being here.